All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves in the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim. So actually, I'd like to really draw your attention tonight to the beginning part of the Parsha. So the Torah says in number one, Ve'ela Mishpatim Asher Tassim Lefnehem. These are the laws, these are the Mishpatim that you shall place before them. Of course, the them being a reference to Klal Yisrael. And Rashi already comments extensively on the beginning of this pasuk. Rashi says, what is this idea? Ve'ela mishpatim asher tassim lefnehem. So Rashi explains so beautifully to Moshe Rabbeinu that you should place the halachos before them kishulchan orech, like a set table. The idea is, don't just give them information, don't just plop down information in front of them, but elaborate, explain, put it before them like a set table so that they understand the complexities and the intricacies of the halacha and the chachmas Hashem and the incredible wisdom of the Ribono Shel Olam. So what's at the beginning of these mishpatim? So the Torah relates, ki sikne eved ivri, if you will go out and you will purchase a Jewish servant, sheish shanim yavod, for 6 years he shall work for you, ubashviyis yetze lachavshi chinam. And in the sixth year, he goes free. So we're familiar with these halachos, the halachos of Eved Ivri, the Jewish servant. Now, of course, it's interesting. The truth is, normally when we translate Eved as how? A slave. So understand, and when we say slavery, so what word usually comes to mind? Mitzrayim, right, in historical context, or the truth is, in a general oppression. Generally, slavery sounds like a relationship of oppression. The truth is, we know that from black slavery in this country. We know this ultimately, again, from our historical context of servitude and slavery in Mitzrayim. Slavery always comes with a connotation of oppression. So even though we use the word avdus to refer ultimately, again, to the system of servitude we have, we know that in the Judaic framework, avdus is anything but oppressive. So let's just spend 2 moments on this. There are 2 types of servants that a person or that a Jew could have. A Jew could have an Eved Ivri, which is what we're going to focus on tonight, a Jewish servant, or a Jew could have an Eved Kenani, a Gentile servant. Now in Halacha, a Gentile servant is reckoned as a possession, as an object. But that doesn't, one should not think that therefore one is permitted to mistreat that servant. We know again, we see it in this week's parasha, that the halacha is that if chas v'shalom, a Jewish master, harms his non-Jewish servant, so what's the halacha? What's the halacha? Depending on the injury, the servant actually goes free. In the event that the servant doesn't go free, there are certain compensatory damages. See, even when we speak about this idea of an Eved Kenani being the possession of the master, it means in a technical fashion, meaning almost like in a financial fashion, but in terms of in a relationship fashion, again, remember, Judaism never gives us the license to wrong another human being. That doesn't make a difference whether that other human being is Jewish or non-Jewish. Every single human being is created B'Tzelem Elohim. Every single human being is created in the image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And by definition, there is always a respect that must always be granted to the other. You know, I always think the most incredible expression of this is Amalek, right? What's the halacha when it comes to Amalek? What do I have to do to Amalek? Well, the truth is that we always say destroy them. But there's one step before destruction, which is what the Rambam brings down, that an Amalekite has the ability to renounce his, what's the right word? His hashkafas, right? He has the right to renounce his Amalekite affiliation. He has the right to tear up his membership card. In other words, what happens if an Amalekite is chozer b'tshuva? What happens if he says, you know what, I don't want to be part of the Amalek nation anymore. I renounce the idea. What's the halacha? What's the halacha? Accept him. We accept him. So, I mean, even Amalek, which is the arch enemy of Klal Yisrael, if he chooses to renounce those flawed life hashkafas, those flawed ideologies, so we accept him. We accept him. Again, there's a lot to speak about on that topic, but not our topic for tonight. Tonight, we focus on the Eved Ivri. Now, even this idea of an Eved Ivri, of a Jewish servant, the word Eved is a little bit of a misnomer. You know, the Rambam brings down the most well-known, what's the most well-known halacha when it comes to Eved Ivri? The most well-known halacha when it comes to your Jewish servant. Right? The piercing of the ear, okay, good. All right, what's the second most well-known halacha when it comes to Eved Ivri? Oh, right, if the last pillow, right? So usually the halacha that's quoted is, what's that, if you have one pillow in your house, so who gets the pillow? The Eved Ivri. So strange. Not only that, whatever I eat, my Eved Ivri eats. whatever my quality of life is, my Eved Ivri's quality of life is, which leads the Gemara to make a dramatic statement. The Gemara says, therefore, Kalakona Eved Ivri, Kekona Adon Liatsmo, that whoever goes ahead and purchases, an Eved Ivri purchases a Hebrew servant, it's as if he's truly acquired a master. Meaning, it's a very dramatic relationship. I am acquiring someone, and we'll discuss the circumstances of that, yet, to a certain degree, that person is put on a pedestal. Or if not on a pedestal, at least on equal footing as I am. Why would the Torah create such a model of servitude? Why would you create such a model like that? Right? It's essentially to disincentivize, if that's the right English word, right? To disincentivize, meaning the goal is we actually don't want Jews owning Jewish servants. We don't want that. Now, sometimes it's a necessity for reasons we will discuss, but that is not the ideal. That is not what we want. So how does the Torah disincentivize this particular model? Very simply, by essentially making it an incredible headache. That if you go ahead and you own a Jewish servant, and by the way, we haven't even gotten into some of the other supporting halachas, which are what? What happens if the Eved Ivri is married? The master assumes the responsibility for support of the Eved Ivri's wife and his children. So this could become an incredible, overwhelming headache that actually, over time, could put the Adon at a disadvantage. And all of this in order to truly disincentivize this model. Okay. That's the background. But yet, amazingly enough, this is what the Torah begins in this week's parasha with. Now, Rashi points out over here, number two, something very interesting. Rashi deals with, okay, the Torah just introduces us to the concept of Eved Ivri, the Jewish servant. But Rashi asks, essentially, how does a person get themselves into this circumstance? In other words, what are the circumstances surrounding the Eved Ivri? So Rashi points out the following. Rashi says, first line number two, Ki sikne, miad bezin shemachru b'gnevaso, kimo shenemar, im ein lo v'nimkar b'gnevaso. So number one, Rashi says, the way a person becomes an Eved Ivri is, they steal, and they have the inability to pay back that which they have stolen. So what does Beis Din do? Reuven steals $10,000 from Shimon and spends all of the money and again has none of the items that he bought with it. He's penniless, but he owes Shimon $10,000. So what does Beis Din do? What does Beis Din do? They sell Reuven, which effectively what they do is they sell off the value of Reuven's services. Meaning, if you think about it, how do you pay? Meaning, what's the value of an Eved? What's the value of a Jewish servant? The value is the amount of work he can give you, whether it's manual labor or something else. There is a value attached to the productivity of that person. We sell that person based on the purpose of that amount, and that money is given to the victim of the Eved Ivri's crime. It's given to the person who was stolen from. That's the paradigmatic case of Eved Ivri. He steals, is stolen ultimately again to make up the debt. There's a second possibility. Second possibility, Rashi says over here in the second line, is Mocher Atzmo Mipnei Dochko, which means what? This is a person who sells himself. Why? What does Mipnei Dochko mean? Because of his extenuating circumstances. This is a person who may be penniless, who may have absolutely nothing. And therefore, again, in essence, he cannot support himself. So what does he do? He sells himself into servitude. By selling himself into servitude, he has a master to take care of him. And ultimately, again, he's able to get back on his feet. That's the secondary approach. But the primary idea behind Eved Ivri is really this idea of the individual who has stolen, done something wrong, cannot go ahead and make it up to the aggrieved party, and therefore is sold into servitude. So if you look at number three, the Lubavitcher Rebbe asks a very interesting question. And it's interesting because, I have to tell you, I never thought of this question, not that that's such a big deal, but I'm saying after seeing Parshas Mishpatim all of these years, this never dawned on me. But after he asked the question, you're going to see it's a very obvious and intuitive question. He writes the following. He says, paragraph Aleph, Psicha shal mishpatim b'dinei Eved Ivri doreshes beir. This idea that the first halach in Parshas Mishpatim is Eved Ivri requires a bit of explanation. L'chol rosh, medubar b'dinim ha-mesyachsim l'tofa nedira yachasis. So first of all, the Rebbe says as follows. Eved Ivri is a very specific halacha that the truth is not always applicable. What do we mean by that? Dinei Eved Ivri, chalim rak bizman sha-yovel noeg. So first of all, number one, so Eved Ivri, the concept only applies when Yovel is in effect. Now, this is very interesting. We're not going to get into the technicalities of why that is. We're just going to take it that that's the truth. Right? So, first of all, when does Yovel apply? This is an interesting halacha to know. When does Yovel apply? The law, remember, the laws of Yovel, the laws of the Jubilee year. We have Shemitah every seventh year. Every 49th year is a Shemitah, meaning 49, year 49 is a Shemitah, and year 50 is a Yovel year. What happens during the Yovel year? So again, a number of things. First of all, it's like another Shemitah. So again, you can't work your land. Number two, slaves who signed up for an extended tour of duty go free. Ancestral land reverts back to its original owners. And says the Rebbe, the concept of Eved Ivri only applies in Yovel. When does Yovel apply? When is Yovel in effect? So, right, that's when it occurs. But meaning, what triggers Yovel? Rov Toshve or Rov Yoshvela, the majority of Klal Yisrael has to live in Eretz Yisrael, which I'll tell you something very exciting, which is, you know, we're only a couple of years away from that potential reality. Meaning we're working towards, it's the first time in 2,000 years that we actually have the ability to say that that possibility may be in sight once again, having the majority of Klal Yisrael living in Eretz Yisrael. Yovel is only triggered when the majority of the Jewish people are residing in the land of Israel. So the Rebbe points out something very interesting. Eved Ivri doesn't apply all the time. It only applies ultimately, and so that's why today, Yovel doesn't apply, which just gets to the whole discussion in general in Eretz Yisrael about the intricacies of Shemitah. Are they Doraisa, Derabbanan today, biblical, rabbinic, all part of the same discussion. So Rebbe says, we're starting out with a halacha that doesn't always apply. It only applies when Yovel is in effect. Not only that, V'rak b'mikre bilti ragil, sheganav shenitvas, ve'ein be'efsharuso l'shalim estimi hagneva. Furthermore, again, this is also a very specific case, because who does it refer to? It doesn't refer to every act of theft. What cases does, when does Eved Ivri kick in? When the person steals and can't pay back. So it's not theft, unfortunately, is a regular occurrence. But a case of theft where a person steals and can't pay back, that's a bit more irregular. Achilo nosra brera el mochro le'eved. In other words, understand, when we only sell someone as an Eved Ivri when every single other option has been exhausted. So meaning, the person has no money, right? There are no family members to front the money. There's no local chesed fund to give money. There's no gemach to borrow money. He doesn't have a house to take out a second mortgage. Whatever it is, you go through the entire list of possibilities, and only when we scrape the bottom of the barrel, that there are no other options for repayment, do we go ahead and we sell this individual. He goes on, he says, Madua Eifo, so Rebbe asks a very simple yet profound question. Madua Eifo, Poschim Hamishpatim Bedinim Nedirim Elu, Velo Bahalochos Hanogos Lenikarim Shchichim Yoser. You hear the Rebbe's question? This is Parashas Mishpatim. Remember again, what happened last week's Parasha? What happened? Matan Torah. Aseres HaDibros. Sanaitic revelation. The beginning of the legal relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. What's Parashas Mishpatim? Parashas Mishpatim is tort law. Parashas Mishpatim are the laws of damages. You have to understand, why right after Matan Torah? This is an important point to ponder. Why right after Matan Torah do we get into all the technical details of Parashas Mishpatim? Why? Because remember again, where are we headed? Where are we headed? Eretz Yisrael. How long are we going to get there in? Right? No, don't say 40 years. Chas v'shalom. We don't know that part of the story yet. Remember again, this is pre-Meraglim. So as far as we're concerned, what is it? A couple of weeks? A couple of months? So what's Parashat Mishpatim? Parashat Mishpatim is Moshe Rabbeinu saying to Klal Yisrael, you are going to enter into Eretz Yisrael soon. And you have to build a society. What is the cornerstone of any society? Is tort law, is the laws of damages, because these are ma'asim v'chol yom. This is stuff that happens each and every day, right? My ox gores someone else's ox. Reuven steals from me. This happens to this one. All this interpersonal conflict, all these interpersonal legal issues, which is what Parashas Mishpatim is, this is the foundation for a just society. So Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, Klal Yisrael, beautiful, you had the Aseres HaDibros, the Ribon Shalom spoke to you, incredible, wonderful. Now, meat and potatoes, Parashas Mishpatim. Let me tell you what it takes to build a just society. So ask the Rebbe, so why are you starting with Eved Ivri? Why you? First of all, I want to take this even stronger. Even if you feel that Eved Ivri has a place in this parasha, what should it come after? The laws of Geneva, the laws of theft. Remember, the laws of theft are included in this week's parasha. See, even just from a framework perspective, tell me first about the laws of theft, and then if you want to tell me about what, so remember, what are the laws of theft? If you steal, right, and you're found to have stolen, you have to pay kefil, you have to pay double, then you could get into that. What happens if a person doesn't have money to repay? Then you could get into laws of Eved Ivri. But the Lubavitcher Rebbe asked such a simple yet profound question. Why is this the first of the Mishpatim? Why is this number one? And again, the question is multifaceted. Number one, it's out of legal order. First, teach me the laws of theft, and then teach me this. But more than that, this is such a specific, we have to imagine, I don't know the number of, you know, Avadim Ivrim who were owned at any particular time, but I would have to imagine it was relatively few. Because remember, this was at the end of the day, if you had exhausted all of your other options, then Beis Din sold you into servitude. But there are so many steps before you get to this. It only applies when Yovel's in effect. So why start with a halacha that is not in effect all of the time? And the truth is not really going to be in effect for the majority of the populace. Why not start with a halacha that is what we call more lemaisa, a bit more practical, a bit more relevant, and a bit more usable for amcha, for the general nation? So the Rebbe gives, it's actually very interesting to see. The Baal Shem Tov obviously was very bothered by this particular question, which if you think about it, is a very profound question. He gives about 7 or 8 different answers throughout the years in his various sichos. Tonight we're going to focus on two. The truth is, I'll tell you a quick one, which is not going to count. Well, chasam, it counts. It's number one, and then we'll do 2 more longer ones. If you skip for just a moment to number 4, so the Rebbe discusses this in one of his sichos. So he writes the following. He says there's a simple message here. If you look in the left-hand column, ha'alicha harishon she'yehudi tzricha liyos ha'kara shehu eved ivri. The first thing, so says the Baal Shem Tov, and the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh also quotes a similar idea, which is the laws of Eved Ivri were there to impress upon Klal Yisrael a deeper hashkafic message. That what is a Jew? What is a Jew? Every Jew aspires to be an Eved Ivri. But not an Eved Ivri to a human master, an Eved Ivri to the Ribono Shel Olam. Now, this sounds like a very obvious lesson, but the truth is, most of us have incredible difficulty submitting ourselves to anyone or anything. Even though we like to say, of course, I'm an Eved Hashem. Deep down, you know, what I'm saying to myself is, you know, you be the Eved Hashem. I'll just be a good Jew. I don't feel like being an Eved to anyone or anything, which is an understandable piece, but part and parcel often of our religious and theological challenges. Meaning, very often, if we take a step back, we've spoken about this concept many times before. At the end of the day, why do we sin? Right? Why do people commit averos? So again, so the truth is, you know, you could go through like the top 3, gaiva, taiva, kavod, right? Arrogance, desire, ego, all these different kinds of things. Rechaim Shulevitz, I've quoted this a number of times in different contexts, but it has relevance here as well. Rechaim Shulevitz says that the psychology of sin is dramatically different. He points to the episode of Shlomo HaMelech and Shimi ben Gera. So very quickly, David HaMelech has the rebellion of Avshalom. His son rebels against him. And David HaMelech decides that he's not going to fight against his son. So what does he decide to do? He decides to flee Yerushalayim. As he's leaving Yerushalayim, who comes out? A man by the name of Shimi ben Gera. Shimi ben Gera was a relative of Shaul. What does Shimi ben Gera do? He starts cursing at David, throwing dirt at David, saying, "You're getting exactly what you deserved. You stole the throne from Shaul. Now your son is stealing it from you. You're getting what you deserved." David HaMelech's generals want to kill Shimon ben Gera because he's disrespectful to the monarch. David says, "No, leave him alone. Leave him alone. This is from God." Fast forward a little bit. David HaMelech is on his deathbed. He calls in Shlomo and he tells. What does he tell Shlomo to do? What does he tell Shlomo to do? He tells him. Doesn't tell him to kill him. He tells him to deal with Shimi ben Gera. So it's like, you know, when the king or the mafia, I guess, tells you to deal with someone, right? So there's one. So Shlomo Melech gets the message. His father wants me to deal, okay? So this is amazing. David dies. First order of business, Shlomo calls in Shimi ben Gera. He says, "Shimi, here's the deal. I'm going to give you a palatial estate in Yerushalayim. I'm going to give you vineyards and fields. I'm going to support you at the king's table. Only one condition. What's the condition? You can never leave Yerushalayim. You can never leave Yerushalayim. So I don't know about you. Somebody gave me that deal. You had me at palatial estate, right? Meaning, again, I'm in. But what's the... So I can't leave Yerushalayim for the rest of my life? Gladly. Gladly. So, okay, Shemin Gary says, thank you so much. Understood that he should have been killed for what he did. Take bows out, fine. Next chapter in Navi, what happens? Shimon ben Gera's slave runs away. His Eved Kenani runs away. What does Shimon ben Gera do? Gets on his donkey in hot pursuit, leaves Yerushalayim. Shlomo summons him. We had a deal, and he executes Shimon ben Gera. Says Chaim Shulevitz, this obviously was a setup, meaning Shlomo Melech knew what he was doing. So what's the pshat? So Chaim Shulevitz says something so beautiful. He says, Yerushalayim Yerakodesh is the most wonderful place, as long as you're there of your own volition. If you want to be there, it's wonderful. If you have to be there, it's a prison. And when a person feels imprisoned, when a person feels confined, it is only a matter of time until they find a way to flex their muscles of self-autonomy. In other words, deep down, none of us want to be told what to do, even if it's by God. I'll tell you something amazing. Do you know what the first, most common first word for children is? No. Right? Amazing, right? I'm sure speech therapist, I'm a monosyllabic, whatever it is. No. So I think from a hashgafic perspective, it's incredibly amazing. What is a child saying? From the first moment that a child has some little bit of a sense of self, what the child is essentially saying is, I'm in charge. You're fashtinking a little pisher in a dirty diaper. You're in charge of nothing, right? You can't even be in charge of yourself. But no, I'm in charge. I'm in charge. No, don't tell me what to do. I'm 2.5 years old and I've got this whole thing called life under control, right? Don't tell me I've got it. The amazing part is we don't really change all that much as we get older. I mean, hopefully the diaper part changes, but the rest of it doesn't really change. At the end of the day, don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me how to behave. Don't tell me what's right. Don't tell me what's wrong. I'm a big boy. I could make my own decisions. Now, none of us would ever dare articulate this in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because when you say it, it sounds crazy. And when you say it, it sounds blasphemous. But Pazet Chaim Shulevitz Zecher Tzadik Livracha, this is a psychology of sin. At the end of the day, when man sins, it's not because of gaiva, taiva, or covet. It's not honor, dignity, arrogance, hubris, ego, desire, lust. That's not it. It stems from a deep desire to not want to be told what to do. I am in charge. And even though you're God, I got it, you're God, I'm Shmuel Silber. So you might be God, but you handle your own stuff. I'll handle me. I'm doing just fine. I know exactly how I need to do it. Now again, it's all subconscious because it sounds ridiculous to articulate it. And again, this is the amazing part. We see this every single day. You know, today it's just a little bit different. So today, if there's something in Judaism that I don't like, we just create different constructs, or we create different movements, whatever. We all do different kinds of things to rationalize what we want. But at the end of the day, it is an inability to submit to the authority of the Ribono Shel Olam. It's an inability to make myself an Eved, because it's difficult to be an Eved, because it's difficult to accept the fact that I'm not in charge. And I'll tell you something amazing, then we'll focus on the next piece. You know, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam, and he wants to put him in Gan Eden, so the Torah says, Vayikach asa Adam, Vayanetina b'Gan Eden. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took Adam and he put him in Gan Eden. So Rashi says, Lakcho b'dvarim. Rashi says he took him with words. Now, why is Rashi saying that? That's not what the Pasuk says. The Pasuk says that God took Adam and put him in Gan Eden, which sounds like what? God lifted Adam up and he put him in Gan Eden. Rashi says it can't be. Because if God would have picked Adam up and put him in Gan Eden against his will, without his buy-in, then Gan Eden wouldn't have been Gan Eden. It would have been a prison. It would have been Shimon ben Gera's Yerushalayim. Kadosh Baruch Hu realizes that he needs Adam ultimately again to submit himself willingly to Gan Eden. Then and only then Does he have a shot at success? So the Lubavitch Rebbe says something amazing. Approach number one in understanding what's happening over here is that Kadosh Baruch Hu begins with the laws of Eved Ivri, even though the mechanistic details are not really halacha lemaisa, but he's introducing the people to the concept of Avdus. You know what slavery is, Klal Yisrael, because just a few days ago, you were slave, or better yet, just a few weeks ago, right? Remember, again, this is after Matan Torah. It's after, so, you know, only 2 months ago, right? 7 weeks ago, you were slaves. You know what servitude was. You remember what servitude was? Whatever the master says you have to do, well, I have news for you. You're free. You're free. You are free. But you still have a master. I still ask of you to be avadim. I still ask of you to be servants, not to a capricious, unpredictable human master. I ask you ultimately again to be servants to me. But successful Judaism requires of us to sublimate ourselves to our master, to sublimate ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this, if we're honest with ourselves, and you have to be honest with yourself, it's a difficult pill to swallow. It's really difficult. I like to say I'm an Eved Hashem. I like to say it's wonderful to be an Eved Hashem. It's fantastic to be an Eved Hashem. And parentheses, what that means is it's fantastic to be an Eved Hashem for the things I like to do, for the things I want to do, but for all the stuff that I'm not such a big fan of, to be honest, I have a lot of difficulty bending my knee before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the struggle of our Yiddishkeit, and it's a struggle we all have, maybe in different areas, in different ways, but all of us, we struggle with the same thing that Shimi Ben Gera did, which is the ability to sublimate my will to the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to bend my knee before the Baal Shem, to understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's needs, what God needs from me, is more important than what I need for myself. That's a difficult lesson. A lesson that we struggle with, and a lesson that HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized Klal Yisrael would struggle with as well. Therefore, answer number one, says the Rebbe, is that the introduction of Eved Ivri was not as much for the mechanistic details of the Hebrew servant, but were much more about the Hashkafa, the need Klal Yisrael, teaching about the laws of Eved Ivri, because your ultimate aspiration, and it is indeed a life's work, to ultimately, again, reach that elated level of being an Eved, of being someone ultimately, again, who is able to submit his or her will to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to make the Ribono Shel Olam's will the dominant force in my life. But go back to number three for just a moment. I'll share with you two other approaches, which we'll see two approaches which are really two sides of the same coin. Skip to paragraph Beis. Actually, go to paragraph Gimel. V'yesh lomar. Shesibas ha-psicha b'dinei Eved Ivri dafka. I'm in number three, paragraph Gimel. Shebedinim elu mishtakefes b'miyuchar mahusam ha-penimis shal mishpatim. So actually, skip down to hey. Sorry. Skip down to hey. Tchunasam. So again, in the part that I skipped, what the Rebbe is teaching us, by the way, is that the beautiful part about mishpatim is that mishpatim teach us how to be properly spiritual people in a physical world. Meaning, we've also spoken about this concept many times, that part of the beauty of Judaism is you need not divorce yourself from the realities of this world to be a spiritual person. Sometimes people think that the material world and the spiritual world are at odds. The truth is, there's a tension, but they need not be mutually exclusive. The mishpatim, the laws that we have in this week's parasha, teach us how to be spiritual beings in an otherwise physical world. But look at paragraph Hey. He says, "Tchunasim shalom mishpatim mispatas b'miyucha b'dinei Eved Ivri." Get ready for this. And he says something amazing. It's the last paragraph on the first page. Eved Ivri, hu adam nochus biyoser mebechina ruchnis. So remember again, who is the Eved Ivri? Who is the Eved Ivri? The Eved Ivri is a person of very low spiritual standing. Adam shenit bas v'gneva. He's a person who stole. And remember again, first of all, the notion of theft, if you think about it, is an affront on so many levels. The notion of gneva, of theft, represents a trespass in interpersonal relationships. This idea that I could take something that belongs to someone else, that someone else worked for, that's important to someone else, that I can invade their privacy, I can invade their home, I can invade their possessions and take it as my own, is an incredible and egregious trespass on an interpersonal level. And of course, it's also a trespass against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because by definition, when I disrespect another person, I'm also disrespecting HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not just that. If you steal, then your entire idea about, your entire hashkafa about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world is flawed. Because what does the thief assume? Right? The thief operates on what premise? Right, that Hashem's not going to give it to you, right? So meaning, I'm going to take what you have, I'm going to make it mine, and he assumes that somehow I could affect the divine distribution of wealth by taking something that does not belong to me. So his understanding of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the material world is flawed. Really? You think that because you take something from someone else that God did not want you to have, that that's going to remain in your possession? That that's going to be successful? It's a lack of emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there's a lack of proper interpersonal conduct. There's a lack of belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The act of theft is an affront to man and it's an affront to God. So that's the person we're dealing with over here. A person who really is on a low level interpersonally and a person who is on a low level spiritually. So he says, "Va'af nimkar b'shal kach le'eved." And again, to be sold as a servant is one of the basis most incredible, we have to imagine, such an incredibly humiliating experience. This idea that I'm being sold as a servant to someone. Nitan haya lachshov sha'adam kazeh, eino ro'i shenasok bo v'nishtad lamano. I might have thought that such a person is not deserving of our attention. Such, you listen, buddy, you got yourself into this mess, you get yourself out of the mess. It's not my problem. You're not a good person. Look what you've done to yourself. Look what you've done to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Look what you've done to your fellow man. So I might have thought that maybe the communal approach to such a person is hands off. Hands off. You got to go figure this out on your own. It's not my problem. Turn the page. Yet, what do we see? In paragraph Vav. Bedinim Eilu Milamedes Osanu HaTorah. So yet again, as we go back, as we said before, but yet we see the laws of Eved Ivri. What are the laws of Eved Ivri? Again, like we saw, you have to treat him as an equal. Not only that, but in certain respects, you even have to give him more than you take for yourself. Not only that, but remember, there's another halakha that's not brought down in this section. It's brought down in Sefer Devarim, which is what? The mitzvah of ha'anaka. By the way, it gets better. How does it get better? What happens when the Eved Ivri goes free? What happens? There's a biblical obligation to go ahead and what? Give him like, what's the right word?
Parting gifts.
But it's almost like investment capital for his new future. Right? So you have to give him migarncha, mikvecha, mitzoncha. What? I have to go ahead. Okay, thank you for me. You did a good job. You paid off your debt. Now that I'm setting him free, I have to go ahead and what? I have to go ahead and give him, whether we call it severance or investment capital for his new future. By the way, not only that, you know what the halacha is? If he was ill during the course of his servitude and he racked up medical bills, you know who's responsible for the medical bills? Yeah. Right? The Adon, the master. So the Rebbe says something amazing. What is the Torah teaching us? Shegam Adam Nochus Zeh. Ro'oi she'yasku bo u'bel chosav. Va'af bo yeshlinog bekavid b'chesed uv'rachamim. Lefarnes oso ve'es ishto u'bevoha is af l'shachar l'chavshi. Says the Babishab is something amazing. What is the Torah teaching us? The Torah is teaching us that no one is beyond salvation. That even this guy who hit rock bottom, don't write him off. Extend a helping hand. Love him. Not only love him, give him covet. Give him covet. Do you see what this guy has done? He's stolen. And by the way, whatever he's stolen, he's obviously not good managing money either. At least if you're going to steal, invest it wisely. He steals, and what happens? There's nothing left. He's got nothing to his name. So I might have thought that such a person like this could be easily written off. The community should have nothing to do with him. No one has any responsibility for him. Yet what do we see? The Torah says, treat him with respect. Welcome him into your home. Give him a job. Take care of his wife and children. Give him the pillow, even if it's the last one. Give him whatever you're eating for dinner is what he eats for dinner. If he gets sick, take care of his medical bills. When he goes free, send him free with a full heart and give him some startup capital to be able to rebuild his life. The Torah is teaching us Dine Eved Ivri, paragraph Zayin. Meshakfim Eifo Es Chashivuso Uma'aluso Shelagufa Yehudi. The laws of Eved Ivri are teaching us how precious every single Jew is. Even the ones who are not so great, and even the ones who are not so honest, and even the ones who have made terrible mistakes. Chashivus shehi nitzchis ve'eno mishtana li'olam. V'tiyeh ramaso haruch nishal yehudi asher tiyeh. So this is amazing. What the Rebbe is saying is, every Jew deserves my attention. Every Jew deserves my compassion. Every Jew deserves my empathy. Why? Because no one is beyond salvation. You don't know the circumstances of this guy's life. You don't know what events happened that led him down this road. Again, I want to be clear. Remember, we're not whitewashing his sins. We're not telling him, don't worry about it. There's a price to pay for his misconduct. There's a price to pay for his erroneous and terrible behavior. There is a price to pay for his wrong choices. But the Torah is telling us is that sometimes we look at people who make bad choices as bad people. You know, Rabbi Twersky, in his book, he has a wonderful book called Positive Parenting. And he says, the worst mistake that parents make sometimes is that they tell their children that they're bad. He says, there is no such thing as a bad child. There are good children who do bad things. There are even some good children who do really, really bad things. But good children who do bad things are still good children. And what's true by children, says the Rebbe, is true by adults as well. There are many people who do very bad things. But even if they do bad things, a person could still be good. A person ultimately, again, and therefore the Rebbe says something amazing. The Rebbe says the Torah is teaching us how to relate to that individual who has made significant mistakes, who has done some bad stuff, who has hurt, who has harmed other individuals. Do not write that person off. Do not throw in the towel on that individual. Obviously, the Torah is speaking about a specific type of trespass. It's not talking about any type of hurt. We're talking about specifically about Geneva over here. This person has done something terribly wrong, an affront against man, an affront against God. No one is beyond salvation. Help him out. Help him rehabilitate himself. Help him get his footing back again. The message being, when you look at the other person, sometimes in life, we write people off. Sometimes in life, we look at people as no good nicks. Sometimes in life, we assume that people won't amount to anything. Says the Rebbe, everyone deserves our attention. Everyone deserves our chesed, because no one is beyond salvation. And then the Rebbe goes on to discuss a lesson that is the other side of the coin. Take a look at paragraph Ches. V'yesh levar. Bepnimiyas ha'inyanim. He said we could explain this a little bit further, deeper as well. Shiano senes davka ato la'acher matan Torah notzar tzorech miyadi la'havir azino shemishlev ezlachas. Be'er dvarim. Paragraph Ches. This is such a beautiful piece. Kol od nimshach matan Torah ha'isa lokis gluya v'nikeres ba'olam b'tzura mukhshis. Move on. Think about this in just a moment. Klal Yisrael existence up until this point in time was like one big divine light show. In other words, the Rosh Hashanah was everywhere. It was mamish everywhere. Miracles. And literally, again, remember, Klal Yisrael sees HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever this means. They see God twice within the span of 2 months. The first time, again, was by splitting of the Yam Suf, where they said, Zekeli Vandeu, this is my God. Rashi says, Rosh Shifcha Layam, they're just the basest, the lowliest of people, saw prophetic visions that even the greatest prophets didn't see. And by Har Sinai, they once again see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is such an incredible level of divine presence and divine revelation. They're living in an incredible cocoon of spirituality. Paragraph Yod. Ach la'achar matan Torah, mishestayim gilu izeh, va'anochachos elokos eno nikeres obe muchosh, alul adam lit'os v'lachshov sh'akadosh baruch hu eno tzofe bo, v'eno mashgiach alav, v'kach likoshel b'maysa menuga l'ritzono shel abori. So what happens? Is it possible that a person could sin during Kriyas Yamsuf? Is it possible that a person could sin during Matan Torah? So the answer is technically yes. But really, for our purposes tonight, no. when there is such an incredible intensity of divine presence, a person is overwhelmed by the Ribbono Shel Olam and recognizes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a force in every area of my life. So how could I sin? How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees all, He knows all, He is present for all? I can't commit Navera. But what happens? What happens? Matan Torah ends. The Shina goes back up to Shemayim. There's no more lightning and thunder. And what happens? It's a regular world. It's a regular world. What happens in a regular world? So a person could forget about the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the moment that I forget about the ongoing presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in every aspect and facet of my life is the moment that I run the risk of making mistakes. Because again, I just have a lapse in my divine awareness. I don't know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was with me, and so I make mistakes. So, which is also interesting, by the way, because think about it. If you think about the transition, we go from the drama of Matan Torah, last week's parasha, to kind of like the mundanity of the laws of Parashat Mishpatim. I mean, if you look at Parashat Mishpatim, Parashat Mishpatim, I think, is fascinating, is intriguing, is very technical, but not really inspiring. Why is it not inspiring? Because it's dealing with the laws of day-to-day life. It's dealing with the laws of damage. It's dealing with the laws of interpersonal torts. So at the end of the day, it's just regular. It's just regular life. Says it has something amazing. Paragraph Yud Aleph. He says, Lekach misyaches hamusag gneva b'mashmu'usa ruchanis. So listen to this. Kishem shaganav oses masa b'sesha machshakim. Mitoch tikva she'ish lo yir'eu b'shas maisa. Kach Adam ze over al Ritzono shal Hakadosh Baruch Hu kitotza mehanocha hamutis shal Hakadosh Baruch Hu inot sofe bo veinu mashkiach alav. Right? How does the ganav operate? The ganav, right? There's a difference in halacha between a ganav and a gazlon. A gazlon is someone who is so brazen that he doesn't fear anyone. He'll rob in broad daylight. A ganav is someone who steals furtively, right? He steals secretly. He goes under the cover of night. Why? Because he assumes that no one could see me. The ganav ultimately forgets about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the notion ultimately again of the ganav is also very reminiscent to the experience, the continuum of the Klal Yisrael is going through. We have this incredible divine manifestation. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kind of the light show is over. One could think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately, again, is not an ongoing presence, and one could end up engaging in Gneva. Gneva is the manifestation when a person has a lapse of divine awareness. They think that no one's looking. Watch this. Watch this. Paragraph Yud Beis. V'lachin, posachos ha-Torah es ha-mishpatim, dafka bedino shel ganav shenimka b'gnevaso. Shekin la'achar matan Torah mishenotra evsharos li'kashal b'gneva. Because so what happens? So right, Ribbono Shel Olam opens up Parshas Mishpatim with what? With Gneva. Why Gneva? Why the laws of theft? Why Eved Ivri? Because Gneva occurs when a person has a lapse in God awareness. A person thinks that as long as man doesn't see me, then what? God doesn't see me as well. That's why, to a certain degree, amazingly enough, being a ganav is worse than a gazlan. Because if you're a gazlan and what? You steal in broad daylight, at least you demonstrate what? You don't care what anyone thinks. Right? You don't care what man thinks, you don't care what God thinks. When you're stealing under the cloak of secrecy at night, what you're saying is, I care about what man thinks, but I don't care about what God thinks. So Gneva ultimately, again, is the most dramatic or paradigmatic example of when a person has a lapse in God awareness. I forget about the emotion so much that all I care about is that no other person should see me. Notzer hatzorech lelamit ulahoros. So again, so before we go on, before we read that last line in your base. So what the laws of Geneva teach us, the laws of Geneva say, you know, there comes a time in life where sometimes a person forgets about the ever-presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A person forgets that God is truly everywhere. That the Ribbono Shel Olam is part and parcel of every fiber of my being, of my life. The Ribbono Shel Olam is everywhere. But sometimes a person forgets that. What do we call a person who forgets about the ever-presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? That's a ganav. Because a ganav is only concerned with one thing. That a person, that a man should not see me. So what do the laws of Eved Ivri teach us? And this is amazing. Look at the last line of paragraph Yud Beis. Notzer hatzorech lelamet ulahoros shegam mishenichshal bekach yesh lo tikun. So this is amazing. What do the laws of Eved Ivri teach us? The laws of Eved Ivri teach us that even someone who suffers a lapse in their God awareness, even someone who forgets about the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and as a result, engages in an incredible interpersonal trespass, as well as a trespass against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, such a person, yesh lo tikun. Such a person has a tikun. Such a person can be fixed. Such a person has salvation. Such a person has the ability to rebuild himself. Paragraph Yud Gimel. Umayu tikun says, what's the tikun? Sheish shanim yavot, ubashviyas yetzi lechav shechinam. For 6 years he'll work, and the seventh year he goes free. So what's the tikun? Alav letakin es ma'asav al yidei avodas hatshuva. A person has to go ahead and work on himself for 6 years. What the Lubav Sheba understands over here is that ultimately, again, this working for 6 years is not just the literal, you're working for someone for 6 years, but what is it? It's a metaphor for self-improvement. 6 years you'll work. 6 years you'll work. In other words, sometimes it takes a very long time to repair that which is broken within you. Sometimes, again, it takes years and years and years to identify, address, own and repair that which is broken. I have to try to figure out ultimately how do I purify myself and how do I purify my surroundings. But when you finish this avoda, this work of introspection and self-repair, but one thing is clear, which is if you're willing to put in the work, if you're willing to acknowledge, own and repair that which is broken, no matter how long it takes, ubashviyas yetzei lechav shechinam. Salvation awaits. You could have a beautiful life again. You could regain your standing, you could rebuild your life, and you could repair your relationship with others, with yourself, and with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, says the Rebbe, the entire section of Eved Ivri is an incredible metaphor for the person who fell, acknowledged his or her shortcomings, weaknesses, took the time to identify and repair them, that for such a person, salvation is within reach. So you see over here that the Eved Ivri, therefore, is really two sides of the same coin. On the one hand, Eved Ivri teaches us that no person is beyond salvation. Even this person who messed up society does not reject him. Society does not expel him. Society does not marginalize him. Society does not make him into, instead, what does society say? We believe in you. You messed up. You messed up really big. And no, you can't just turn this around and one day it's going to take some time. But we believe in you. And we will set up the framework to allow you to rehabilitate yourself. But it's almost as if the Rebbe takes this a step further. But in order for you to believe that someone else is not beyond salvation, the prerequisite for that is what? I must believe that I am not beyond salvation. And even if I am the Ganov, even if I have forgotten about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even if somehow, some way, my life is such that the Ribon Shel Olam is not front and center, and as a result of my God, a lapse in my God awareness, I've made some really bad mistakes in life, like the Ganav who makes bad mistakes because of his lapse of God awareness. Even if I made very bad mistakes, I am not beyond salvation. Sheish shanim yavod. I know that I might have a lot of work to do because I might be very broken. I might have many deficiencies, many weaknesses, but I'm willing to put in the work. I'm willing to address that which is broken. I'm willing to address that which is wrong. I'm willing to repair that which is in a state of disrepair, no matter how long it takes. And if I'm willing to commit myself to identifying, owning, and fixing my issues, ubashviyas yetzei lechavshi, then I am not beyond salvation. I am repairable. I am salvageable. I am redeemable. I am capable of once again becoming holy, no matter how bad or how far I have fallen. And therefore, it turns out that the Ribon Shel Olam gives us this first message of Eved Ivri, not really because of its mechanistic details, because as the Rebbe told us, the mechanistic details, first of all, are very detailed. Second of all, don't always apply, only by Yovel. And third of all, for the general population, this is not halacha lemaisa. But the Ribon Shel Olam was trying to give us a three-pronged message. Message number one, the hardest but yet most important avoda of the Jew is to make himself into an Eved Ivri. And that's a lifetime of work. Because at the end of the day, what all of us want more than anything, whether we're consciously aware of it or not, is self-autonomy, is control. Yet, what I need to be successful in my Judaic existence is the ability to sublimate myself to the Ratzon Hashem. Ki sikna evet ivri. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I have one aspiration for you, and that's for you to become an evet ivri. That's message number one. And messages two and three, which are two sides of the same coin, is to recognize that even when those close to us make mistakes, the goal ultimately is to believe in them. But believe in them not just in words, but believe in them ultimately again in deed as well. Because ultimately again, if we show others that we believe in them even when they fall and fail, then they will have the koach to begin to believe in themselves. If we give them the message through our words and through our deeds that we believe that you are not beyond salvation, then they will find the courage to believe in that themselves. But the prerequisite for that is, before you can believe it about someone else, you have to believe it about yourself. We all become a ganav at some point in time. We all suffer some type of moral lapse or failure. We all make mistakes because we forget about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Like the ganav, we have the lapse in our God awareness. But if we acknowledge our faults and shortcomings, own them, if we're willing to work on them no matter how long it takes, even if it's sheish shanim, then ultimately, again, we too are never beyond salvation. We too are never beyond rehabilitation. No matter how badly we've fallen, no matter how badly we failed, we always have the ability to pick ourselves up, reclaim our former standing, and reclaim the Kedusha that we may have lost. All right, we'll stop over here for tonight.